Welcome back, dear students. Have you been studying the major exchanges where stocks are traded? Study the different types of transactions and what can we reasonably expect to pay when we do our purchase our shares or sell our shares. How about the 8 major indices that we need to commit to memory? Every day, dear students, study and bring honor and glory to Southwestern Community College. Because in this presentation, we're going to take a look at some common stock characteristics that are important for us to understand and know and be able to explain to our friends and family and coworkers. And we're going to begin the long process of starting to look at numerical measures. Okay, so make sure you've done worksheet number 1. And after this presentation, you're going to do worksheet number 2. There's a commentary and answer key. Yes, of course. So let's get started on slide number 6. What are stock spin-offs? Well, a spin-off is a corporation selling a piece of itself. It's a conversion of one of a firm's subsidiaries to a standalone company by distribution of stock in that new company to existing shareholders. So in other words, a company is selling a piece of itself to the shareholders. And you keep the company that spun off the other company, but now you get new shares in the new company. Sometimes the new company is still majority owned by the company that spun it off. For example, Altria, which used to be called Philip Morris. Well, there was a time when Philip Morris owned Kraft and Miller Brewing and Nabisco. And who else did they own? They owned a bunch of other companies. And they started to spin them off. They spun off Miller to SAB, a South African brewery. They spun off Kraft, and you received shares in Kraft. And then Kraft split itself apart. And then Altria divested itself of its international tobacco business. They spun off Philip Morris International. So they started breaking up the company. That was quite some time ago, in the 2000s. Interesting. Philip Morris International is based in the United States, but they don't sell any cigarettes in the United States. They sell the Marlboro and the Virginia Dims outside the United States. So talk about crazy old world. Here's a company that's based in the United States that doesn't do any business in the United States. The history of spinoffs have been checkered. Some spinoffs have done better than the companies that spun them off. Examples of these are the Baby Bells that were spun off from the old AT&T. This was 1984, folks, a long time ago, when AT&T basically was this huge monolith that ran the telecommunications system in the United States. And for years, people talked about, you know, we really should split up the monopoly. So AT&T at first wasn't too keen on it, but then they basically saw the handwriting on the wall. Well, they spun off the 9 what were called Baby Bells. AT&T got to keep the long-distance business and the manufacturing, which was called Bell Labs and Western Electric. Well, the Baby Bells did great. Whereas because of new technologies, the long-distance service fell and basically became not worth very much. And the Baby Bells started to eat one another until finally there were 2 left standing. Bell Atlantic, which you know as Verizon, and SBC Communications, which you know as AT&T, because they eventually bought the old AT&T so they could use their name and get that wonderful ticker symbol T for telephone. Some spinoffs have not fared well. For example, Coca-Cola Enterprises. This is the bottling part of Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola makes the syrup, which you turn into the fizzy sugar water with a brown crayon dipped in it. Coca-Cola Enterprises, the idea was to allow them to bottle for anybody. And it didn't turn out so well. And then Lucent Technologies, which was the old Bell Labs, the people who brought you the transistor and Unix, which is now Linux, and Western Electric. They made the best telephone equipment in the world, and they were spun off from the old AT&T as Lucent Technologies. Well, they almost went bankrupt. And we'll talk about them later on when we get to more numerical measures of companies, specifically earnings per share. Slide number 61. A stock split is something completely different than a spin-off. A split is an accounting maneuver in which a company increases the number of shares outstanding by exchanging a specified number of shares of stock for each outstanding share. So, for example, there's 2-for-1 splits, but there are many others, 3-for-2, 1-for-5, what, a reverse split, 1-for-10. So the typical one is a 2-for-1 split. So you had 100 shares. You now have 200 shares. Yippee! No, it's not. There's no value created. The share price went from $20 down to 10, right? So you doubled the number of shares and the price went in half. Now, companies used to do this for a very specific reason, because it allowed investors to buy 100 share round lots. Remember the old round lots? But that's all gone. You can buy one share just as easily as buying 100 shares. And so some companies have decided we're not going to split our shares. And that's why Amazon and Google were $3,000 a share. And finally, they said, well, let's split the shares. And they split them like 10-for-1 or something. Read the bottom carefully. Oh, by the way, what's a reverse split? You had 10 shares and they took them away and gave you one. Now, why would they do that? So they could increase the price tenfold. Instead of, you know, if you went 10-for-1, the price would jump, would fall 90%. It would go down to 10% of what it was. But if you do a reverse split, then the price is going to jump up. Now, why would you do that? Well, if you're on hard times, if your company's hit hard times and the price has fallen below $5, $2, $1, the NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange, they don't want you anymore. They don't want to be associated with penny stocks. Now, maybe your company is really a bona fide company, not somebody's garage out in Iowa or Idaho or one of those places that starts with the letter I. But you're a real company, but you're just really, really hurting. So you would do a reverse split to raise the price so that the exchanges would not kick you off and send you over to the wrong side of the tracks, the pink sheets or the bulletin board. So now let's read this carefully at the bottom. There is no increased value from stock splits. If you had one share at $20, you now have two shares at $10. The value is still $20. It is a psychological increase at best. Since the 1960s, Warren Buffett of Berkshire Hathaway has refused to split his stock since its inception. He always hated the fact that it was an accounting maneuver and wasn't really doing anything for the company, for the shareholders. A single share now goes for $589,000. But if you had purchased one share of Coca-Cola over 100 years ago or Johnson & Johnson, that's what they would be, right? That's what they would be. Very interesting. Very interesting. We're going to see that Mr. Buffett was cajoled into creating a second version of Berkshire Hathaway. Because how many people are going to buy a stock for $589,000? Well, some of the brokerage firms now will let you buy fractional shares. Say you only have $1,000. You could buy 0.00589 shares of Berkshire Hathaway. Now, I know Schwab does this, and I've called them and they never got back to me, and I have to start needling them. Because I asked them, and I finally got to somebody who kind of understood what I was asking. What's the spread? How much are you charging us for not buying a whole share of Berkshire Hathaway or a whole share of whatever company? You're buying a fractional share. You know, that obviously you're not going to get the best price, right? Well, I haven't gotten an answer from them. He said he would get back to me. He never did. So I got it. The ball's in my court now. Got it? No increased value from a stock split. However, what companies often do now is when they issue a stock split, it's a way for them to say, you know, things actually look pretty good. without saying things actually look pretty good, because if they say things actually look pretty good and they turn out to be not so good, they can get sued. 400 years ago, Shakespeare said the first thing we do when we get into power, when we get in power, is kill all the lawyers. Folks, we love the lawyers, because before lawyers, how did we settle disputes? Pistols at dawn. I'll pay the lawyer $300 an hour, thank you very much. I don't want to get shot at. Slide 62, Treasury stock. This is shares of stock that have been sold and then subsequently repurchased by the issuing firm. I don't really like the names Treasury stock, but that's what they're called. And these are called share buybacks or share repurchases. Now, what's the logic here, right? Share buybacks reduce the number of outstanding shares. The logic being that after the buyback, there is less supply of outstanding stock. Existing shareholders now have a larger percentage ownership of the corporation. And those of you who have taken Econ 101 know that if the supply is reduced and the demand doesn't change, what should happen to the price? The price should go up. During the run-up of the 1990s, share buybacks were often seen as a better alternative to dividend increases. The belief was that investors were more interested in capital gains than dividends, and that buybacks increased the potential for capital gains by reducing the supply of stock. In the 2017 tax cut, they reduced the corporate taxes drastically, the Republicans. And the idea was they were going to, pay people more wages and give out more dividends and the like to the investors. What they did a lot of was buy back their shares. So it was a great windfall for the people who owned the shares of stock. Because once they're in the treasury, they're no longer in circulation. And that has reduced the number of shares that are being traded. Make sense? I hope so. If not, contact me. Slide 63, classes of common stock. I made a real quick reference to this a few slides ago. Some companies will have various classes which offer different privileges, class A, class B, class C, and it depends on the company, of course. There was a time when GM, I think, had 7 all the way up to class G shares, not anymore. But one, the class A might be the one that is sold to the public that pays a certain dividend. The class B shares might be the ones that are owned by the family that maybe don't have as much say in the running of the company, but pay a much more generous dividend. Or vice versa. Facebook. They issued a new class shares that are held by the inner circle, mostly Mark Zuckerberg, that make it impossible for a company, for anybody outside the company, to try to take over the company. So he's not the only one, but he has these shares, Class B shares, which have much more voting rights than the Class A shares. You and I, we would buy the Class A shares. And maybe when you did, if you did the bonus assignment for Chapter 2, you saw that Google actually has 2 major classes, Class A and Class C. Well, Berkshire Hathaway did the same thing. Remember the Class A shares? They're selling for almost $600,000. Well, in the mid-1990s, the financial world was pressing Warren Buffett to either split the stock or offer a lower-cost version of his stock. See, and then they were threatening to do what now is being done technologically-wise, where sell fractional shares. So he grudgingly went along and created the Class B shares, which initially sold for $1,160 each. That wasn't what they had in mind on Wall Street. They wanted something, around $100 or whatever. In the prospectus, in the new offering of the Class B shares, Buffett said he wouldn't buy them. He said, if you really want to own our company, buy the A shares. But then what happened is he found out that these B shares he could use very adroitly. He could use them to buy other companies. He could use them like cash to buy other companies. So in 2010, they split 50-for-1, which lowered the price substantially, and now they sell for about almost $400. So he uses the Class B shares to buy other companies. You could buy either one, but most of us are going to probably buy the Class B shares unless you have $589,000 lying around the house, or you want to go to Schwab or one of the other brokerage firms that'll let you buy, you know, $1,000 worth of the shares. Be careful. I want to know what that spread is. I want to know what they're charging us, because they're not doing it for free, right? It costs them money to keep track of all this. Because what they have to do is they have to buy a bunch of Class A shares, and then they divvy them up. It's all electronic, you know, it's all software, it's all program done. But still, it's not free. It's probably a very sophisticated process. It has to be, because they don't want to screw up. Slide 64. Now, here are some common stock values that we will deal with, you know, as we go along. The par value, the book value, and the market value. The par value is a relatively meaningless value. It'll say something like 1 cent per share or 0.01 cents or whatever, just some ridiculous number. I'm not exactly sure why it is. I mean, maybe someone told me a long time ago, but I've since forgotten. It reminds me of the coupons. When you get a 50 cent off coupon, on the back it'll say, this is worth 0.001 cents or something like that. And that's, I think, because people would send the coupon in and say, hey, send me 50 cents. Like, it doesn't work that way. They want you to buy the toothpaste or buy the thing is and get 50 cents off at the grocery store. And then the grocery store, they send the coupon in and get the 50 cents back. The book value, on the other hand, is important. And that is the amount of shareholders' equity in the firm divided by, minus any liabilities, divided by the number of shares outstanding. So what are we talking about here? Some of you might remember net worth in the Business 121 Principles of Money Management, or if you've taken accounting, you know what book value is. You add up the firm's assets, you subtract any liabilities, and in this case, the preferred stock, and then divide by the number of shares outstanding. So that tells you what the company is worth on the books. Now remember, this is an accounting number, so it might not be actually realistic. If you actually did sell all the assets, pay off all the debts, you might not actually get what you think you're going to get, or you might get more. But what's more important is the market value. That's the prevailing market value of the security set by the forces of supply and demand. And what we're going to see is that sometimes the book value becomes greater than the market value. It's usually much less, sometimes 3 times less, 4 times, 10 times less. Sometimes the book value is negative because they loaded up on a lot of debt. But if the book value becomes greater than the market value, then there's a real danger that they go by various names, takeover artists, corporate raiders, private equity individuals. These people will swoop in, buy 50% plus one of the shares, and then liquidate the company, sell off all the assets, pay off the debts, and walk away with money in their pocket. So it's a danger, and it doesn't happen often, but it can happen. And how would you like that? You've been working for this company for 22 years, and now somebody comes in and says, "Oh, we're liquidating the firm. Here's 3 months severance pay. Good luck." Yeah, so you know, it's part of capitalism. The economists and the corporate raiders, if they deigned to talk to you, would say, "You don't understand. This capital was not being used efficiently. Not only the assets of the company, but you, the human capital. We need you and the assets of the company to be plowed under and used more efficiently in our economy," which is not very reassuring, or doesn't really assuage your pain of losing your job. But that's why we have things like unemployment insurance. We don't have unemployment insurance so to pay people not to work. We have it so that they have something to fall back on when they go out and find a job that is productive, that is increasing the worth of the economy. I know it sounds kind of like an ad from the 1950s, but that's how it works, right? And again, it's not perfect, but we do the best we can. And as it says in the bottom here, more about valuation when we get to chapter 4. Now, dividends. Oh, dividends are one of my favorite topics. Dividends are distributions of earnings given to the shareholders. They are normally paid quarterly in the United States and any country that had something to do in the past with Great Britain, with England. In other words, Canada, South Africa, Australia, Hong Kong, and of course, Great Britain itself. These companies in these countries normally pay quarterly. Outside that zone, the Commonwealth as it was called a long time ago, they will typically pay every 6 months or maybe once a year. But in the United States and those other countries that we discussed, they typically pay quarterly. Boards of directors decide how much, if any, dividends should be paid and when to pay them. Remember, dividends are optional. There's no mandate, not like a bond. A bond, they have to pay you the interest. That's part of the deal. But stocks, if they've been paying dividends for 100 years, they could stop next quarter. Now, companies that have been paying dividends for decades or 100 years or so, they tend to continue to pay dividends, but that doesn't mean they can't stop. Dividends are usually a percentage of earnings per share, yet another very important statistic. This is the amount of annual earnings available to the common stockholders, the common shareholders, as stated on a per share basis. So you add up how much money they made, divide by the number of shares, and that's the earnings per share. And both of these numbers, you don't have to do the accounting. You just look them up on the InfernoNet. So here's an example on slide 66. The company reports the net profit of $1 million. There are 500,000 shares outstanding. So what's the earnings per share? It's $1 million of earnings divided by 500,000 shares, or $2 earnings per share. So you can think of your one share of stock as a little business making $2. And of course, if you have 100 shares, that's, you know, $200. The board of directors might decide to pay out 50% of the earnings per share in the form of dividends. So that would mean each shareholder would receive $1 dividend for each share they owned. This is called the dividend payout ratio. So the company is paying out 50% of their earnings to shareholders in the form of dividends. Typically, companies that have been around a long time, are not in their fast growth stage, will pay out a higher percentage of their earnings, whereas companies that are growing and they're in the early stages of their growth, they might not pay out any dividends. They might need the money called retained earnings. If you've taken accounting, you remember that term. They might pay a little bit of their earnings out in dividends. Once a company starts to pay dividends, they tend to continue to pay. And if they stop, their stock usually gets hammered, because there's a lot of us people who buy the shares not only for the capital appreciation, but they buy them for the dividends, because dividends don't lie. All the numbers you see on the financial sheets, on the InfernoNet, all the numbers you see, they could all be made up except for one. That's the dividends. Why? Because they sent you a check. Well, not really. They don't send a check anymore. They put the money electronically into your brokerage account. But you get the idea. We know that the dividend number is real. The earnings per share, all the other numbers that we're going to look at, they might be real. They might not be real. They mostly are, especially with companies that have been around for a long time. But there are times like Enron. Some of you don't even remember them, Enron, where the numbers were just completely bogus. Bogus, bogus, bogus. How'd they get away with it? Well, it's a long story, and if you want to search, just type Enron into any search engine, and Ken Lay and George Bush Sr., his buddy, and see what happened. And read. That's the key. I think that's the key to success. Actually, the key to success is breathing. Can't succeed unless you breathe. But after that, reading. So the dividend yield on slide 67 is yet another important statistic that we will work with. And by the way, in worksheet number 2, you're going to do some calculations. But again, you just look them up on the internet. The dividend yield is a measure that relates dividends to share price and put stock dividends on a relative percentage basis rather than an absolute dollar basis. So for example, if the stock in the previous slide that was paying a dollar dividend were selling for $20, the dividend yield would be 5%, 0.05. Do it, it's very simple. A dollar divided by $20 is 0.05. And this makes it easier to compare stocks with other income-oriented vehicles such as bonds or savings accounts. Now, what's the difference? The big difference is a bond must pay you the interest. The savings account will pay you interest. The stock could stop next quarter. They could say, you know what, we're not going to pay a dividend now. And sometimes they do. This is typical with companies like car companies, where they're doing really great and they're paying you great dividends, and all of a sudden there's a recession and now they're losing tons of money because nobody's buying cars anymore. And they will cut the dividend or reduce it and then bring it back when things get better again. Look at Ford. Look at what they did over the last 10, 20 years. You can go to Yahoo and ask for historical data, and then just not ask for the prices. Just say, I want to see dividends. And then go back, 20 years and see how the dividends grew, and then down, went down, and then grew. GE was famous for this too. Traditionally, 3-6% was normal. In the 1990s, dividends went down to 2% or less. At the peak of the market in March of 2000, they went to 1%. They've never been lower. Dividends went above 3% in the 2008-2009 turmoil, and now they're back down to below 2%. Actually, I think they're like 1.48 or so. So, not good. Not the best. But for us people who really love dividends. For a long time, the stocks were actually paying more than savings accounts. Now savings accounts are obviously paying more. You figured that out in chapter one assignment. But people said, well, savings accounts aren't paying that much. Bonds aren't paying that much, so I'll accept a lower dividend. Slide 68. So now, folks, make sure they don't do it right now, but make sure you do that worksheet number 2 that goes through those statistics, those characteristics that we just discussed. Now let's take a look at some important dates with regard to common stocks, dividends. There's the declaration date. This is the date that the board of directors declares the dividend. They say, yay, we're going to have a dividend. This is how much it's going to be. And whoever owns the shares on the date of record, the record date, will receive those dividends. That's the date on which an investor must be a registered shareholder of the firm to be entitled to receive the dividend. But you can't wait until the dividend, till the date of record. No, you have to buy it before the ex-dividend date, which is 2 business days before the date of record. This is what determines whether one is an official shareholder of the firm and thus eligible to receive a declared dividend. Huh? I don't understand. Hang on a minute. We'll discuss it in more detail on the next slide. And then the payment date or the distribution date is the date on which the company pays the dividends. And that's usually a few weeks after the date of record because they got to get all the data together and then send out all the money. So you got it? You got it? The declaration date is a few weeks before the date of record, but you have to buy the shares before the ex-dividend date to actually be one of the shareholders who's going to receive the dividend. And then you get it electronically in your brokerage account a few weeks later. Why, on slide 69, is the ex-dividend date 2 days before the date of record? Well, this is because stock transactions close in 2 days. Just a few years ago, it was 3 days. And then a couple decades ago, it was 5 days. But now it's 2 days. Mutual funds, by the way, are 1 day. Bonds are 1 day. When you buy the mutual fund, you actually get it the next day. And when you sell the mutual fund, you get your money the next day. And stocks are 2 days. They clear in 2 days. So because stock transactions close, or sometimes you'll hear clear, in 2 days, if you purchase the stock on June 15th, you don't actually get the stock until June 17th. So theoretically, the opening share price on the ex-dividend date should reflect a drop in price commensurate with the amount of the dividend. So for example, if the stock were going to pay us a dollar dividend, then we should see the opening stock price on the ex-dividend day be reduced by a dollar. But it never really works that way because prices are changing all the time. But that's the theoretical idea, because they're taking a dollar away from the company and sending it to the shareholders. So you may hear on slide 70, don't buy the dividend. This is a common saying in the industry. The translation is you're often better off waiting until the ex-dividend date before buying the stock. And the logic follows thusly. Dividends are taxable transactions, right? They're sending you money. You can think of them like interest payments, but they're not. Legally, they're very different. They're taxed differently, but it's the same idea. They're sending you money. If you buy the dividend, you buy the stock just before the ex-dividend date, you will be responsible for paying the tax. And presumably, the stock price will fall commensurate with the amount of the dividend. So you are better off waiting until after the ex-dividend date so you'll not get the stock at a better price. So you will get the stock at a better price and not generate a taxable transaction. Well, folks, for the less little people, we're not buying that many shares. I mean, if you're going to buy 10,000 shares, okay, maybe it makes a lot of sense. But for the vast majority of us, we don't have to worry about this. This is something, though, if you have come into a great deal of money and you're going to buy a mutual fund, be careful, because typically at the end of the year, mutual funds will distribute their capital gains. So you want to either call the mutual fund company or talk to your broker or just do your own research and see if the mutual fund that you're interested in is going to distribute a large amount of capital gains. So if you say you bought it December 1st and then December 10th, they distributed, 10%, you're going to have to pay capital gains on that amount. You've only owned the thing for 10 days, right? Now, if this is inside a retirement account, a 401k, a Roth IRA, or educational savings account, you don't care. It's not important. But for the vast majority of us, this is not something we really have to worry about. No, we're not talking about a lot of money. Now, this wasn't my client. This was many years ago. My boss's client. He was fairly wealthy, and I never really got to meet the guy. But he would buy the dividend. He would buy the company right before the ex-dividend date just to grab the dividend. And then afterwards, he'd sell the shares. So he was even more enamored with dividends than I am. And so I thought that's an interesting strategy. But he had a lot of money. He didn't have to worry. He didn't really need to do this. But he did it. And that was part of his strategy. Everybody has a different strategy. Now, slide 71. This is important stuff. And even if you don't understand the second one, you better remember this. You want cash dividends. A cash dividend is typically the type of dividend you're going to get, especially with a bona fide, real company that's not trying to snow you. You get the dividend payment in cash. They put it in your account. They used to send you a check. They don't do that anymore. Some companies will send you a stock dividend. This is a payment of a dividend in the form of additional shares of stock. But all else being equal, and of course they never are, stock dividends have no value because they constitute a dilution of ownership. It's very similar to the stock split that we talked about at the beginning of the presentation. So for example, the board of directors declares a 10% stock dividend. So you have 10 shares, and now you receive one extra share. So now you have 11 shares. But the price of the shares dropped 10%. So did you really get anything? No. Unlike a cash dividend, thankfully, the stock dividend is not taxed. Thanks a lot, IRS. Thanks for not taxing me on something that's not worth anything. Right. So you do not want stock dividends. But here's where it gets a little tricky on slide 72. You can start what's called a DRIP. I love that name. A dividend reinvestment plan. This is a plan in which shareholders have cash dividends automatically reinvested into additional shares of the firm's common stock. This is a taxable transaction because no additional shares were issued. Hence, no dilution of ownership occurred. So here's the dynamic. You're going to get a dollar's worth of dividends or whatever. Or maybe you have 100 shares, you're going to get $100. The company usually doesn't do this. They hire somebody to do it for them. They will have purchased these shares on the open market. So they're not new shares. They're not being newly issued and diluting the number of shares outstanding. And with that $100 or however much you make, they're going to buy fractional shares for you. They're going to buy shares for you and add them to your total shares. Dividend reinvestment plans are an excellent way to own stock for those interested in long-term growth and not interested in current income. In other words, if you need the income from the dividends, great, you know. But no, if you don't need the income from the dividends, this allows you to earn a compounded rate of return. It allows the investor to take advantage of compounding automatically with normally no or tiny little transaction costs. This is what your mutual funds are going to do for you. They're going to redistribute dividends and capital gains, but unless you say otherwise, unless you ask otherwise, they're going to reinvest them in additional shares in the mutual fund. This happens automatically with the stocks. Same idea. You're going to get more stocks. And on the and in Canvas and on the website is an example of Sempra Energies, SDG&E, where we were invested. It was an investment club I was in. We were invested in Sempra, and we had a DRIP. We had a dividend reinvestment plan. Well, now most all brokerage firms offer this. They didn't used to. Used to have to go directly to the company. And many of the large companies still offer this service because, you know, they want to make it desirable for you to buy their shares. But they don't do it themselves. They hire somebody else. I forget it was called Equiserve or CompuServe or Compu something or CompuShare. And so check it out. Check it out. Okay. All right. That's dividend reinvestment plans. Very, very cool. Not the same as stock dividends, although they are issuing you more stock. They are buying those shares on the open market. They're not creating new shares. So you do want dividend reinvestment plans. And typically, as we said, most all brokerage firms offer these so that you could take advantage of the compounding. And then our final slide for today is price to earnings ratio. Oh boy. This is the most watched stock market statistic. It's called the PE or the PE, you might see PE and think like physical education. No. Price divided by earnings. It's a very simple calculation. And again, we can just look it up. So if that company that was $20 stock price earning $2 per share, we would take $20 divided by $2, and that would give us a PE of 10. Now, don't put a dollar sign or a percent sign. It is unitless. And if you do that on the exam, I'm not going to take points off or anything like that. But just realize that the dollars cancel. I hate that word, but that's what we use in mathematics. And we're left with a unitless number 10, price to earnings ratio. So you'll see 10 PE, P/E. Traditionally, stocks sold for PE ratios of 5 to 15. A PE of 20 was only reserved for the fastest growing stocks. During manias, PEs of 20 plus are not unusual. And of course, during downturns, PE ratios come down greatly. We will spend a great deal of time learning price to earning ratios and other valuation techniques in the next two chapters. So it's very subtle, and it's something that you want to reflect on and ruminate on. And of course, as you look at more and more companies, you will see vast differences in the PE ratio. Typically, companies that are hot, that are the sexy companies and on the cover of GQ and Vanity Fair and Vogue, they will have very high PEs. And companies that are boring, stodgy, will have low PEs, but not always, not always. So right off the bat, when we see a high PE, we can ascertain that investors are pretty excited. Not all the time, but usually we can be relatively assured that investors are excited about the prospects for the company. If we see a very low PE, it's the opposite. We're not too excited, or investors as a whole. Now, are they right? We'll know in, you know, 3 to 5 years. That's why they call it the future. Cool. So we want you to do worksheet number 2. That's right. And go back and study these and make sure you know these, what a stock split is, what a cash dividend, what a stock dividend, dividend reinvestment plans and the like, because you're going to be the investment guru, rising investment gurus for your friends, family. Have I said that? I think I have said that a few times. We're so proud of you. We're so excited. You're learning so much. Now you can listen to the talking heads on the telly or the Infernal Net and kind of figure out what they're talking about, right? Right? Stick with us because all shall be revealed. We are rooting for you. We are excited for you. We are very, very proud and honored that you are with us. See you in our next presentation, where we will discuss the various types of companies and take a look at another market statistic, market capitalization. How big is the company, or how small is the company, or how mid-sized is the company?